I'm very thrilled to be here, and I want to thank all the organizers, and I also want to thank the APC, which gave me a corsage. I didn't think it went with my outfit, but I think it's beautiful, so I just want to hold it up for all you guys. I also didn't want the other speakers to feel left out. Harsha, in her brilliant speech, forgot to tell you something, which is that on February 5th, very soon, there's a refugee camp that No One Is Illegal is planning, which is going to be an incredible opportunity for all of you here to act on some of what we've been talking about here tonight and build some really important coalitions in this incredibly diverse city with all of this latent power if we actually get together more and cross boundaries more, which is really what the groundbreaking work that No One Is Illegal here in Vancouver is doing. So I urge you all to take part. This evening has been a little bit of false advertising because I think you're all here to talk about the war at home, and I'm actually going to talk a little bit about the war over there in Iraq, and I hope that's okay. I think it's an important time to try to get focused on the next phase, because as you all know, everything's fine now. The war is over, the occupation's over, they had elections, and everything's fantastic. In fact, we did a panel this afternoon at UBC on occupation here in occupied territory here in Canada and in Palestine and in Iraq, and I got a phone call in the middle of the panel. I checked my message afterwards, and it was CBC TV, the Sunday morning show, asking whether I would come on Sunday to debate Michael Ignatieff. And the topic is, was the left wrong about Iraq? I thought it was a bit of a slanted question, actually. You thought the framing of this was wrong, Harsha. I don't know if you've detected a note of triumphalism with relation to the elections in Iraq, if you've been watching CNN. I hope not. Michael Ignatieff, actually, is one of these guys who, Michael Ignatieff has become a big fan of Empire, or Empire Light, as he calls it, friendly Empire. Empire for human rights and democracy in every corner of the world, as George Bush tells us. Michael Ignatieff was one of the people who defended the war, the liberals defending the war, because he felt, maybe they're there for the oil, maybe they're there for the military bases, maybe it has something to do with Israel, maybe it has to do with opening up a new free trade zone in all of the Middle East, but the trickle-down effects of human rights and democracy will be so fantastic that all people of good conscience should obviously support this war. And the people who made those arguments with a straight face obviously have had a bit of a difficult couple of years because they had to try to continue making these arguments even after Abu Ghraib. Afterwards, Michael Ignatieff sort of said, after Abu Ghraib, he said, I shouldn't say after Abu Ghraib because it's still going on. In fact, Human Rights Watch just issued a report about how torture in Iraqi prisons now, not just prisons being run by the United States, but being run by the new U.S. and Canadian-trained police, there is systematic torture. They used the word systematic. Systematic, and in fact, they said there's something new. They said the people of Iraq were not liberated from Saddam to be delivered to new tortures, but that's in fact what's going on. I read the Human Rights Watch report, and there was something interesting in it, which is beyond the fact that torture, and when I use the term torture because they do, and there's absolutely no doubt that what's going on is torture. They're using electric shock. They are using absolutely brutal techniques that I won't go into in more detail, but the worst you can imagine. But something is going on that didn't actually happen, apparently, in Saddam's time, which is the police are saying to the people that they're torturing, if you want me to stop, pay me. A lot. There is systematic extortion in the Iraqi prisons right now, And torture is just being used as an extortion technique. And I read many reports of this, and this is the Human Rights Watch report that came out last week, where people who came out of the jail said, yeah, I paid my way out. I paid them to stop torturing me. There are people in there still who are being tortured because they couldn't pay the ransom. And there was one person quoted in the Human Rights Watch report who said, they are treating us like the spoils of war. Well, I wonder where they got that idea. I wonder where they got that idea. Because this is the trickle-down effect of war. You have the top-level spoils being handed out to the Bechtels and the Halliburtons and the billions. And by the way, Bechtel just got another more than billion-dollar contract 2 weeks before the elections because they had to lock it in before the elections. There's actually been a whole fire sale of contracts handed out in the past week. Shell and Texaco, BP have all signed exploration deals, training deals with the Iraqi oil ministry in the days before the election to lock it in. It was a pre-democracy liquidation sale is actually what's been going on in Iraq. So Michael Ignatieff, yeah. Well, this is clearly not my prepared speech because I just got this call. I think I'm actually going to debate him because the guy really pisses me off. So they had to keep making this argument. They had to keep making this argument even after Abu Ghraib, even after the Lancet report came out saying that there had been 100,000 excess deaths. They had to still make the argument, yes, human rights is going to be a trickle-down effect of war, democracy delivered by F-16. And now they are apparently vindicated. This is apparently their victory. To see Iraqis willing to risk their lives to go to the polls. Now they're taking credit for this. And they are apparently proven right. I want to talk about those elections a little bit later on. But before I do that, I want to talk about something that happened a little more than a year ago, on January the 19th, 2004. Almost exactly a year ago. On that day, there were 100,000 people who marched on the streets of Baghdad. It was certainly the largest demonstration since the war, but by some measures, it was the largest political demonstration in Iraq in 30 years. There had been religious demonstrations, but there hadn't been just a purely non-state demonstration. Absolutely peaceful. There were 30,000 people in Basra, same time. They marched through the streets of Baghdad, and they chanted, yes, yes, elections, no, no, selections. They also chanted, yes, yes, elections, no, no, occupation. They were demonstrating against what was called the November 15th plan, which was a plan that was cooked up by Paul Bremer, the former chief envoy in Iraq, and his bosses in Washington, to deal with the fact that Iraqis were demanding elections, were rejecting their economic reforms, the fact that even their hand-picked appointees on the Iraqi Governing Council we're saying we're not going to go ahead and privatize Iraq because while it's under occupation because it's illegal under the Geneva Conventions. And they didn't know what to do because none of the investors could come under these conditions because none of the insurance companies would offer them insurance to come to Iraq. So they had this problem, which is they've invaded this country. They've rewritten all of the laws to make it the most liberal investment environment anywhere in the world. In fact, Donald Rumsfeld said Iraq has some of the most progressive economic laws anywhere in the Western world. And he said anywhere in the free world, forgetting that it was actually under occupation. They had a 15% flat tax, and it's interesting when this flat tax was introduced under occupation, they went from having a 40% tax rate for corporations, which is fairly standard, to having this 15% flat tax. And as we all know, the Republicans are obsessed with this idea of the flat tax. And Iraqi business people were worried about what this was going to mean, whether they were going to be able to compete with all of these American multinationals coming to their country, especially because they didn't have any electricity and they didn't have emergency generators for their factories. They were going, welcome to the wonderful free market, compete after 13 years of sanctions, after not being able to replace a spare part with no electricity. Welcome to the free market in the dark, right? And meanwhile, cheap imports are flooding across the border and these guys are being told to compete. So they said to Paul Bremer's deputy, a guy named Michael Fleischer, Ari Fleischer's brother, Ari Fleischer, the former press secretary for the White House, they said, how are we going to be able to compete? We're going to be driven out of business. And Michael Fleischer sort of acted like the guy on Survivor. He said, only the best of you will survive. You will be voted off of your country. And then he said, besides, the entire Republican Party is envious of your tax law. So, I mean, this is the level of utopian euphoria that had gripped these guys. The idea of what in one place on earth, they were just going to erase this country and rebuild it from scratch. That's why they didn't mind that the museums were being looted, that the libraries were being looted, because the more destruction there was, this is the great Christian myth of redemptive violence. Here, I mean, it's a good place to talk about it. Cleansing through violence, okay? This is one of the most dangerous ideas in the world. These guys believed it. And so they thought that the more violence there was, the more perfectly Iraq could be reborn through the nucleus, which was the only building that they protected, the oil ministry. That would be the nucleus of the new Iraq.